This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
This is the start of day three. It's about 6:30 in the morning. And I was originally intending staying for breakfast at 7 o'clock and leaving about 7:30. But to be frank, I'm too anxious. Well, anxious, nervous, don't know. When we put this itinerary together, it was day three that was worrying me. Because this is the one that finishes going up the side of Loch Lomond. This is actually the hardest part of the route, I think. And then I'm supposed to make another 6.5 miles on the other side of the loch, more or less, up to Crian Larrick. Now, much as I might question my ability to do that, and probably rightly so, I was sitting in the bar last night, and this young woman came in just after 7 o'clock at night, and she's got a rucksack on, and boots, and waterproof, and she's trying to check into the hotel. And I could half hear her conversation. She said, this morning, in Milgai, and the barman said, how far is that? And I said, if it's from here to Milgai, it's 27 miles. She says, did you come from Milgai this morning? And she said, yes. And I was stunned. I mean, it's taken me 2 days to do that. And it's not an easy 2 days. Well, not by my lights. I said, you know, are you a hill walker, a mountaineer? What are you? And she said, I'm a nurse. Day your hats off to her. If that's an indication of how much the nursing profession walk, what they regard as being normal, I am lost in admiration. And I asked to speak to her, you know, to record her, and she was just too shy. Her name was Arlene. Hats off to Arlene. Stunning.
Leaves are falling all around. Time I was on my way.
This is a pool of dark, peaty water, and it's a bit like it's a photograph of something that Andy Goldsworthy did, the sculptor. Because every rock, every edge, is just limned in this necklace of copper-coloured oak leaves. And walking along the last 7 miles, because it's mostly forestry track, the views of the loch are not great, because you're in amongst trees most of the time. And you have to sort of recalibrate your head to think, actually, the trees are the view. You need to concentrate on the trees. And every so often, a gust of wind would hit them. And because it's that time of year, all these leaves would start to come down, just pitter-patter all around you. It's like being blessed. This is my first staging point today. This is at Inversnaid. And there's a cracking waterfall there. Listen to that. Probably several thousand years of winter spate has scoured every last vestige of soil off the rock. So only when it's partially protected does stuff grow. There's quite a lot of oak trees, rhododendron, fern, moss. Probably bluebells that would have been down there, although they're out of season now. And the rock itself gets covered
where the water touches it, in this sort of black moss stuff. Looks pretty slippy. I'm standing on the bridge. It comes down maybe 20, 30 feet in front of me. If I turn round, immediately below me, it's dropping the same again. And then it seems to drop about 30, 40 feet into a pool at the bottom. And there's a huge boulder off on the right-hand side, which has obviously just been rolled, in fact, two of them. They've just been rolled downstream with winter spates. Beautiful as this is, it pales into insignificance against the prospect of a cup of coffee and a bacon roll. And so, to breakfast. I'm trying to laugh through the tears. There's a sign on the door that says, Inversnaid Hotel. We are currently closed due to COVID-19. I've got maybe, I would imagine less than a mile away from Inversnaid, and this is a happy accident.
I'm David.
And Alison Downey.
Right, okay, what are you pair doing, aside from making me feel bad?
We're running and walking. Probably more walking than running in this bit, because this is a technical bit, really, but we're just out for a day trip, so we'll do a few miles, and we'll head down back to Inversnaid, and then we'll go down to Rowardennan, that direction for a few miles, and then turn back, and just go back up again.
When you say this is a technical bit, essentially I would define this as rocks and roots and roots and rocks for about 7 miles.
Uh-huh. Yes, I would agree. It's not really my sort of terrain, but anyway.
you really cannot take your eyes off the ground for a second.
No, that's right. I would say I'm probably more of a road runner, but we were supposed to do this race here, the Highland Fling, this year in April. Obviously it was cancelled, and next year's has already been cancelled. So. We'll see. Hopefully the following year. So David's done it 3 times, I've volunteered 3 times, and this was going to be my first year actually running it.
It runs from Mogai to Tyndrum. That's the race.
Okay. I'm reading your Highland T-shirt, Fling. The Ding Ding Highland Fling, 53-mile ultra marathon.
That's it. Yep. There's plenty of walking, but there's plenty of running too.
How do you come to realise you can run 53 miles in a wanna?
I don't know.
Our first ultra marathon was Glen Ogle, which is still scheduled to go ahead for this year in November, so that was 33. Well, we came on a training camp for the fling, and I did 22 miles that day, and David did 37 or something, so that was his longest, and then his first fling was about 4 weeks after that.
There's a lot of walking as well. The guys at the top of the pack are trying to win it. They were obviously really fast, but everybody else, it's a day out to try and do it. Uh-huh. You know, time isn't necessarily that important. You might have a time in mind, but you just want to try and get to the finish. So there's lots of walking. You walk up the hills mostly, and running downhills on the flat if you can, but this is quite technical, so you're not going that fast on this stuff. But until about 3-4 miles in, then it's a little bit easier towards Benglass after that.
Okay.
But it's all good fun.
When you actually run these distances, do you have to run these distances? You know, but that means does it become a compulsion?
well, I was only ever going to do one marathon. I've done 7 now, and done 6 ultras. And I suppose it's just the next challenge, isn't it? So this the fling was going to be my big challenge for this year.
I think the fling's got a great atmosphere. Lots of folk know each other, and it's a nice sort of friendly atmosphere, and everybody helps out. And the volunteers love it, and the runners love it. And it's just a nice big event. It's really, really well organised.
I'm not quick, but I'm cheap, which is why they use me. But were you the pair that actually posted something about Dario's post?
Oh no, I did see people posting about it.
What is Dario's post, and where is it?
It's just a bit before.
Well, before Benglass.
Uh-huh. Maybe about 2.5 miles maybe from Benglass.
3 or 4 miles from here.
And it's on the top of a slight hill. It's just on the left side of the path, and it's just a big wooden post. And it's the memory of the guy who actually set up the Westland Way race. Uh-huh. And a lot of folks stopped there. And how he drew there to toast him when they're doing the race.
I've just realised I've miscalculated. My wee dram is with the baggage, which was with the baggage carrying service. Okay. So that's a waste of time.
That's not good.
No, it's not. That's a logistical problem
there. So when you see Dario's post, you're almost at Benglass.
You've got a little bit to go, but you're getting there.
Yeah. And you're over the technical section. It gets easier from there.
It's still hilly, but it's not quite so difficult underfoot. It gets quite rocky from here. This next section's a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
So take your time on that and you'll be all right, I'm sure.
I have no option. I have no
option. There was two women we met up there and they were quite worried and they were doing the whole way and I said, look, don't, you can't throw the towel in here just because you're not happy on this rock. It only takes a certain length of time, 2-3 miles worth, and then you're okay, but... So you just take your time and you'll get over it.
2 or 3 miles fucking seem like an eternity.
Oh yeah, I know, I know.
Yeah.
Even from here, going across it slowly, it still seems to go on forever.
Well, I slow David down because he's obviously a lot better at this sort of thing than I am. I'm not very
That's
not
probably
very
why I take you.
I used to hill walk. I only started running when I'm mid-30s. I used to hill walk all the time. My dad took me when I was really young. So I'm used to rough terrain in the mountains. So this doesn't bother me that much. I quite enjoy it. Because I'm just used to that, but I know a lot of folk get really fazed by this kind of bit.
Is there a trick to running in this kind of? Because I mean, you know, it's ankle breaking stuff.
You just have to.
Watch where you're going. Watch where you're going.
You just change your stride all the time, and you just jump in and down between the rocks and between the roots, and you just.
I wish folk could see what you're doing, etc. Disco is not dead.
No, you just have to. You just can't keep a same pace. You can't. No. Your legs have to be moving at a different way all the time, and you just trot across it. Walk when you need to, and jog again, and walk when you need to.
I'm just delighted I bumped in the pity. That's excellent.
That's good. It's good to. I mean, we knew you were doing it, so it was good. It's good to see you.
If you just looked at an Ordnance Survey map, you know, and you looked at the contours, and you thought, that's all right. It never rises above 300 feet. It's fine. It's not bother at all.
No, there's quite a bit of up and down in this whole section. Really, I suppose from Balmahar onwards, it gets steadily more tricky. That's the people. I think it's the bit the most folk probably that are walking it probably find the hardest. And after get to the top of Loch Lomond, it's. Yeah. Sort of easier, but they've still got the Glencoat and Devil's Staircase and the big climb up out of Kinlochleven as well. So.
Real pleasure meeting you both. I'd love to shake your hands, but for obvious
reasons. I know, obviously not. No.
That's it.
Thanks very much, and hopefully you'll get there and you'll enjoy it.
Well, I'm just going to take my time.
Yeah, great.
But as I said, I've got little option.
Well, that's it. Just take it easy in those rocky sections. Don't have a tumble.
Yeah,
well, at least take a picture for evidence.
Ah, sure.
Right.
No bother at all. You know, when the weather's really miserable like that, there is nothing you can do except keep on putting one foot in front of the other, just trudge along. There was nothing I could do about the rain, but I could do something about the fact that I was hungry, because the West Highland Way passes within a stone's throw of one of Scotland's oldest and reputedly most haunted hostelries, the Drover's Inn at Inverannan. So lured in by the idea of an open fire and a bowl of soup, I hung a left and met up with Mac, who's one of the managers, who explained a bit more about the place's rather unique reputation.
315 years we've been a functioning inn, so 1705 is when we were established, and never gone out of business, still functioning, as you can see, still quite busy, even after the pandemic, so I can't really complain.
I like the T-shirts that the staff wear, says Scottish Pub of the Year, 1705.
Yeah, award winners.
Well, the first time I came in here, 35 years ago maybe, there or thereabout, maybe 40 years ago, the decor has not changed.
It doesn't change at all. We try to keep the authenticity of the place as much as you can, as much as you want to with a place like this.
I've been on the West Highland Way for 3 days now, so you start to recognise set faces. To get here from the West Highland Way, you basically have to leave the campsite, go across the bridge, come down the road. It's a detour. And when you're walking any distance at all, you hate detours. You just don't do detours. But folk do it for here. You know, because I've met two groups of people. As I headed in, they were heading out saying, you know, they just had lunch here.
I mean, in terms of the Drovers and how famous it is, a lot of the people walking the West Highland Way do want to stay here. They want to come experience it. Even if they can't manage to get a room, they'll still come over from the campsite, maybe to have a bite to eat or just experience the place for a drink. But the West Highland Way is very important to us. It's all walkers from April straight the way through to October. The majority of, I'd say 80% of our clientele are walkers on the West Highland Way, so phenomenal amounts of people.
Have you noticed a real difference, you know, this year because of the COVID-19 restrictions?
We opened our beer garden on the 9th of July and then we reopened inside on the 15th. To be quite honest, in terms of how busy we are and in terms of people still wanting to come through the place, I haven't noticed a massive difference, and that's unbelievable, and it's what you want to see as a manager of a place. It's nice to see people are still wanting to get out and about.
Just explain what you were doing before you came to speak to me.
I was outside splitting logs for our fires, because they're quite quite healthy fires.
They're very authentic.
So yeah, splitting logs, it needs to be done on a daily basis. They chew through that many, so Good fun.
This is a daft question, and I know it's a daft question, but I have to ask it. This has got the reputation as being one of the most haunted... I mean, what hasn't got the reputation of being one of the most haunted places in Scotland? Is it?
I believe so. I mean, I've experienced a few things myself. I was staying upstairs. We have a penthouse room, which is only used for staff. And I used to stay there when I first started, and I awoke at 3 a.m, and I don't know whether it was just because I was dazed or whatever, but I saw an image at the bottom of my bed, and then there was 2 loud bangs, and my mirror fell off the wall and split into shards.
I can only take on face value, you look like an honest face.
I take that as a compliment, thank you. I work reception as well, so this was maybe about 2.5 years ago. A young lady came downstairs to me at about 6 a.m, crying. She was staying in the haunted room, so we have a haunted room. She said she felt a tight grasp of the hand, as if someone was clawing to her, and she came downstairs crying. So that wasn't a nice experience.
Why is it called the haunted room?
It is called the haunted room because in the mid-1800s, obviously, we're right at the top of Loch Lomond, it turns into a small river. There was a family playing out by the river, and the young girl drowned, and she was actually brought here into the Drovers Inn, taken to room 6, and that's where she was laid on the bed, and unfortunately that's where she passed, and it's her spirit that haunts the room. And that is a true story.
As you can probably hear, I'm no longer outside. I am inside in my hotel room in Cree and Lanark, having finished the 20 miles for the day. It took me 12 hours. It was about 54,000 steps, according to my pedometer. And some of it was pretty tough. The first section, as far as Inversnaid, was a delight. Most of that was in Broad Forestry Track, and I was probably doing about 3 miles an hour. The next section, however, from Inversnaid to Inverarnon, that's tough. That's the hardest bit. And without a word of a lie, I probably dropped out about 1 mile an hour for about 3 hours. You can see the hydropower station across the other side of the loch through the trees occasionally. And I just didn't seem to move in relation to it. I'm not, obviously I was moving, but it just seemed to take a long time. It's rocks and roots and the path's very muddy and broken and up and down. And, well, I don't know, I couldn't take my eyes off the track. And that's a bit of a shame, because the West Highland Way shouldn't be a slog. Inevitably, you come out the far side of it, and you start to walk in more open routes again, which was a real relief, but then the rain started, which is why I'm recording this in the bedroom and not outside. Because whilst I'm contractually obligated to get soaked to the drawers, the equipment is not. And if I wrecked the recording equipment halfway through the trip, what else was I going to do? Anyway, end of a long day. Every available heat source in this room is now festooned in damp kit. Some of it's actually downstairs in the drying room, which this hotel thankfully has. And tomorrow's another day. Off from Cree and Lanark all the way up to Bridge of Orkney, but it's a shorter day and it should be a lot easier. So, get my tea, get organised, get some kip. If you've enjoyed this, then please take a look at some of the other podcasts made by BBC Radio Scotland on a whole range of subjects, from sports to history to music, you name it, we've got it. You can find all of them in the podcast section of the BBC Radio Scotland website or on BBC Sounds. Until the next time, I'm Mark Stephen. Thanks for listening.